The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. My name is Patrick, and I'm sitting here at Worldcon with the folks behind Glitter and Mayhem. I'm going to let them introduce themselves because that's just easier for me and I'm lazy. Why don't we start here?
I'm Lynn Thomas.
And what did you do for Glitter and Mayhem?
I'm one of the editors of Glitter and Mayhem.
Okay.
I am Michael Damian Thomas, and I'm also one of the co-editors. And Lynn and I are the managing editor and editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I've been hanging out with Janet, by the way, and she's very clear about I don't have anything to do with the magazine. I only do the book publishing part. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Yes. There's no problem with that. And how about you?
My name is John Klima. I'm also an editor of Glitter Mayhem. The entire book is my fault. And in my copious spare time, I edit Electric Philosophy.
And one of our recent episodes of the SF Signal podcast, Karen Burnham could not stop talking about how fabulous this book was.
Wonderful.
Absolutely loving it.
We were very, very happy with the Locus review.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I mean, you got reviewed in Locus.
I have been told we were getting reviewed twice.
Nice.
We're actually getting reviewed in the next issue also.
The other thing is that I've met artists, authors, editors, and everybody was talking about they were looking forward to the roller disco thing.
Yes. That was last night.
How'd that go?
It was a lot of fun. We had 40 people, I think.
Yeah, about 40 people.
About 40 people who came to the launch party.
And honestly, for an off-site event that isn't walking distance from a convention,
that's astonishing.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, there was a point where, you know, it was just far enough away that the people were getting that feeling that my taxi driver is actually taking me into the middle of Texas.
Right.
And bad things are about to happen.
Or that they know I'm not from Texas, so they're taking me the long way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, everybody had a great time. I'd say probably half of us actually skated and the other half hung out at the snack bar and played foosball and the video games.
Right.
But I think everybody had a really good time. I'm still sore. I skated for 2 hours straight. I hadn't been on roller skates since high school.
Yeah.
I grew up in a roller rink. My uncle owned Skylight Skating Center in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Cool.
Growing up. So I had lessons and the whole nine yards. So for me, it was really deeply nostalgic. And for those of you that are hearing random sounds in the background, that's our daughter, Caitlin, hanging out.
Yeah, she's playing. She's good. Yeah. Having good fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually started with the launch party, because that is how the project started.
Right.
It was a launch party that we came up with before we had an idea for what we were launching.
Yeah.
this would be cool.
About a year ago, we had gotten done with Worldcon in Chicago. And on Twitter, I kind of lamented the fact that it was so much fun to see everybody and hang out and have fun, and kind of like you do after a good convention. Like, can't we do that again? And I said, I want to throw a glitter party for all my friends in San Antonio. And then Michael found San Antonio has a glow roller skating place called the Rollercade.
Yeah, I mean, that was where it started. Was we were just messing around, because I had no one knew what John meant by glitter party.
I knew.
And I don't know where the association came in my head to a roller rink, but I started Googling around and I found this place. It was a classic roller rink in town, and the pictures looked great, and they advertised glow skating, and all, you know, and where there were disco balls that came down and black lights and all these other things and a fog machine. And I was like, wow, that would be the most fun, to take all of our friends and just get out of, because, you know, we love World Cons and we go to World Cons, but
sure,
there does come that point where you do enough parties in hotel rooms that it becomes this blur,
right,
of
heat.
Heat.
Sardines.
Yeah.
Heat, sardines, and inexpensive liquor.
Humidity, beige walls, cans of bad beer. So you... It's like, wow, this would be fun. We should do this. And then John, I think, was the one who thought, you know, maybe we should have a reason for the party.
Right. Well, this would be the best launch party ever, glow skating. And then it was like, well, what kind of anthology would you launch with a glow skating party.
Yep, and you came up with Glitter and Mayhem.
Yes.
Yeah, a speculative nightclub anthology.
it just kind of grew from, you know, roller skating to, and I think that we just had that roller disco. And are you familiar with the movie Xanadu?
Yes.
Okay. So, not a good film.
Here's why I saw it. I was working with a party company.
That's what he cosplays, so.
No, I was working with a party company, and these are party planners, and they did all these parties for the company that I was working for at the time. And they always did cheesy, weird stuff. And there was one guy who, after 3 years of knowing him, he's like, "You do audio engineering, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He's like, "I really love the movie Xanadu." And I said, "Okay." He goes, "But the soundtrack that they sell doesn't actually have all the music that's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to figure out a way to strip the music out for me? And I'll pay you?" And I thought, as long as you're not going to sell it, you know, if it's just for yourself, sure, I'll figure something out. Oh, that was a mistake. So sit there, and I basically had to watch Xanadu as I'm with Wiretap Pro recording it. And then I had to go through and cut out all the speech, you know, and everything, and get him the songs, and I built him a little CD. It took forever. But he paid me for it. You know, it was just for him. He just really wanted that. But that's my Xanadu story.
Well, and I just want to quick apologize. I can't help myself, but I always pronounce it cosplay. I know it's cosplay, so, but I always say cosplay. I don't know why.
You know what I find interesting is all the John Klima cosplay that goes on at Worldcon.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of people in shorts and t-shirts.
And what's even weirder, actually, is the George R.R. Martin cosplay. I wonder sometimes if he pays people to come dressed as him to distract them so he can actually wander around.
Possibly.
There are a lot of people who wear your t-shirt, though, the Electric Velocity t-shirt.
Yeah. Yes.
With you on it.
Yes. Yeah, I tend to make things all about me if
I do that. Which is perfect because isn't that like the disco era?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So we had the glow skating down, and while we were doing it, some other writers. I mean, that was the thing, you know, because once we start going on Twitter, other people started egging us on.
Yeah.
And people came with title ideas, and we're already like talking their story ideas then, and of course, it, you know, we're so early in the process. We're like, wow, this, but we were realizing people want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We could do this, and then we started to think, well, how could we do it? And that's when we started to think, well, why don't we kickstart it? Because selling it to a that was the other issue, was we realized we have this time frame that was going to be nearly impossible.
Right, a year to get all the stories and get
less than a year.
Yeah,
year from concept to publication, and you know you're going to spend 3 months talking and thinking about it, so you're really going to have 8 or 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
To start writing and then editing and all the different things, and we ended up less time than that, but
yeah.
It's to, like Michael was going to say, you know, go to a publisher and say, here's this great lineup for a book, it needs to be published next August.
Yes.
And then you listen to the laughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so immediately it seemed like,
and we don't have the stories yet.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the peals of laughter.
Most of them.
That sound like the Joker.
One story we ended up with well before, but that was because of the nature of that writer.
Yeah.
Who is just very, very efficient.
Gotcha. There's a few of them like that. I mean, as we've been recording this, Ken Liu actually wrote 3 stories. Yeah. So.
Yes, he did. Actually, about this.
So you got your launch party idea. So you guys did this in complete reverse order.
Yep.
Yes.
You got your launch party idea. Then you started working on, hey, maybe we could do like an anthology. And then you started working on maybe getting some stories because you're kind of brainstorming on Twitter in different places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you figure out how you're going to fund it.
Yep.
You're going to do a Kickstarter, and then you figure out who's going to publish it.
Well, we start with the publishing. We did talk to Apex Publications and Jason Sizemore, the publisher there, before we started the Kickstarter, because we didn't really want to go through that. Once again, because of the time frame and everything, the idea of self-publishing it was another thing where we would have to learn some skills and run around, and mm-hmm. we wanted to just focus on, well, the party. We just wanted to focus on skating.
Right.
Making a great anthology and skating. So so we brought in Jason, and we started to figure out how to go about it so that we could have it out for the next Worldcon, because obviously it had to be launched here this weekend.
Right, because this is where the roller rink is.
Exactly.
Well, and that was, we needed to figure that pretty quickly, because if we weren't going to be able to hit that deadline, then we need to scrap the project so that no one starts investing real time into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We could still think about just doing a a trip with friends to the roller skating place. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we were able to get it accomplished.
And is that why there's three editors? You could split up the work a little bit and get it done quicker?
Yes. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of those things where John and Lynn had talked anyway previously about wouldn't it be great if we did a project together in the future, because they have similar theories on speculative fiction and what they want to see in short fiction.
And just let me wonder, was that by any chance a conversation that took place at a convention in a bar?
No, actually, no. That one was on Twitter again.
Oh, okay.
Where Lynn had done a tweet that she wanted fiction that was
so experimental it needed a safe word.
And then John was like, yes. Me yeah. too. And then there was... Now, Lynn and I, though, have been editorial... I mean, I got involved because Lynn and I are essentially editorial partners.
Yes.
And I've been... I was the associate editor on all of her Chicks Dig...
on all the Dig books that I did.
Yeah.
And when I moved into the position at Apex, Michael became my managing editor. And, you know, we... I am the editor-in-chief, and the buck stops with me, but nearly all of the decision-making is made jointly. I mean, there is not a story that is published in Apex that is not read by and talked about by both of us before it makes it into the magazine.
So editorial letters, everything have always been...
Yeah.
So we've always been Team Thomas, so we kind of then joined up with Team John.
Yeah. So if you want stories so experimental that they need a safe word, are you guys going to take on Rigor Immortis 2 Electric Boogaloo?
No.
No one wants to take on that project. I keep teasing. No one wants that one.
No, but
that's James. She wants
said
to
no.
do it. She can. She's
like
she's,
she actually.
All her.
Actually, her exact words to me cannot be repeated in the company.
Right, because then you can't get into iTunes.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Sorry, I'm laughing because we just had half of a SF Squeecast title blocked out by iTunes.
iTunes, yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Since the title for this month's episode, based on a line said during it, is
you do not masturbate your Hugo.
Ah.
So it's like I look at iTunes and then it had like all it said masturbate had been taken out.
Did you go to the rehearsal last year where the artist was actually
yes.
doing
was
that?
Was actually polishing the Hugo? Yes.
Yes. And we're sitting there going, is she doing that ironically?
Or in earnest, or both.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, we were there for that, yes.
It was a very strange...
Very surreal.
Yes. In fact, my rehearsal is at 2 o'clock. I gotta go.
Yeah.
Us too. We will go. We will walk with you.
Well, we're at the 2:30.
We're 2:30.
Yeah, we're at the 2:30.
Yes, so we already knew we had similar editorial philosophies, and we'd wanted to work together, so the three of us... But we did realize that having three of us also meant we could split a lot of these duties.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know, not only would we be doing the normal editorial stuff, but because we're doing a Kickstarter, that means a whole new level of administrative work
mm-hmm.
that normally isn't there.
Right.
Yeah.
And luckily, John had just done a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I did a successful Kickstarter for Electric Velocipede, so I got the joy of doing another. And you know, they are a lot of fun, but they are a ton of work.
Yes. Just ask Borbeck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work on the front end, and it's mm-hmm. a lot of work afterwards, and we're still finishing things up.
Yes. But you would think that if you did all the work and you put together something like this, and you walked over to a publisher and said, "Look what I've got! It's all ready to go. All you have to do is print it," they might be happy with you.
Well, I mean, in some ways, yes, but there's just so many little things that go on in publishing that have to be dealt with, and there's a lot of behind. I mean, yes, they're happy to, especially with the. We put together, I think, a phenomenal roster of writers.
Yes, absolutely.
It was, you know, almost it was almost ridiculous the amount of awards.
Do you want to read the featuring?
Well, just the cover is featuring Christopher Barzak, Maurice
Broaddus.
Broaddus, yeah.
Maria Devonta Headley, Daryl Gregory, Shauna McGuire, Tim Pratt, Diana Rowland. Other award winners like Rachel Swirsky. It was just kind of. I think nearly every writer there has won or been nominated for a major short fiction award.
And they all just jumped on the idea.
Yeah, they all just jumped on the idea. There was a lot of... These stories, much like the best parties, these stories just kind of came in fast and furious and hard and were awesome, and then they got back out. And it was. I mean, the actual writing time that most of the writers had was about 6 weeks, roughly.
Yeah, because we finished the Kickstarter in
February.
Mid-February.
Yeah.
And... with the exception of Shannon, because that was part of a reward level, and she has a novella, so she actually has the longest piece, but yes. No one else had written anything, because if it wasn't successful,
then, you know,
then let's not do it. Shannon wrote within one of her existing worlds, so she'd be able to reuse that somewhere else, if need be. But we were successful, so then we turned to the writers and say, go, this is your deadline. And virtually, well, enough people hit the deadline that we could begin working on it, and the people who were late weren't very late.
No, I think the you know, we still had plenty of, and you know, by that point we'd added Amber Benson to do an introduction.
Well, and I'm curious, where'd that connection come from? How'd you get Tara?
That's through the Squeecast, because Amber guested on the Squeecast. Amber and Shannon are friends.
Oh, okay.
So
and Amber's also an urban fantasy writer.
Yeah, she Urban is, also no, writes urban
I've,
fantasy.
I've tried to get her on the podcast, and her publicist is like a gatekeeper.
Yeah. So for us, it was just a function of. It was very much a, Shannon, do you think Amber would be interested in doing this? Is it okay if we email her? And she was like, yeah, you know, she sort of felt her out a little bit. And then we just emailed Amber and said, would you be interested? You know, and, you know, obviously we paid her and everything. And we sent her a sample of the stories that we had in already, you know, with the caveat that they hadn't been, you know, copy edited and edited yet. But here's the feel.
Right.
And she wrote an introduction that was just a lot of fun. And, she was just lovely to work with, because she is absolutely just lovely.
She came to Pikes Peak Writers this year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends actually got to pick her up at the airport, drive her to Colorado Springs, and then take her back to the airport, Colorado Springs. And, I mean, you talk about squeeing. She said, basically, I'm driving Amber Benson, and I'm squeeing the entire time.
Yeah.
Because I get an hour alone with Amber Benson in the car.
Well, when we did the SF Squeecast, I'm the moderator, and so, you know, my job basically is to be the exasperated straight man to everybody else kind of doing their thing. And we were really, I was really, really good through the whole thing. And then at the very end, when we stopped recording, I was like, okay, this is the awkward part where I tell you that I loved you on Buffy. And she was really gracious about it. So, but I held it in the entire recording, and I was very proud of myself.
Yeah. And, you know, the great thing about Shannon's participation, that was one where Shannon actually went to Twitter and mentioned, while we were still, the idea was gestating with us, and we're still thinking, how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? And Shannon just suddenly starts tweeting, I want to write a roller derby novella, but no one will ever buy this.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
not knowing that we were talking about this at all.
And John and I think we both added at her immediately on Twitter, like, hold on.
Hold that thought.
Can we email you? There is this thing.
There's a thing you need to know yesterday.
Well, and that was the crazy thing, because I'll say an interesting concept, and if you want to put that in air quotes, you can. It could be something like, either you're going to get it or you're not, and for a lot of writers, it might be, you know, kind of a non-starting point. I have no idea how to write this thing, so we're asking people, and so many people were on board very quickly. People that I just thought, well, I'm going to ask them because I know them, and I think it'd be great if they were in this, but. Like Diana Rowland, I thought, she's probably not going to be interested in doing this. And I can't say her response, but she was very excited about the idea. And I'm like, okay, great. She's like, I love roller skating. It's awesome.
No, David J. Schwartz and Christopher Barzak both had like the same reaction of like, I have been waiting my entire life
to write this story.
To write a story like this.
On the flip side, you have someone like Daryl Gregory who said, oh, that sounds interesting. Let me think about it. Somehow, I translated "Let me think about it" to "I'm putting Daryl's name into our little press releasey thing," and Daryl was like, "Did I agree to this?" I said, "Oh." He's like, "No, that's fine. I think I have an idea. That's okay." I'm like, "Oh, good, good. I'm glad you do." And then, he recorded a video of himself in a dress for us. So.
No, and then you know, and with Kat Howard and Maria Devana Headley, you know, for them, this was like, wow, it was like, we can do something glam and stylish because we are glam and stylish. They are glam and stylish people.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is just a lot of fun because we also didn't really, other than we were trying to kind of roughly say it's about nightlife and a little, you know.
Nightlife and parties and debauchery, oh my. The idea was that what we wanted to do is sort of look at the dark side of nightlife. So we're looking at. The tagline that I kept sort of coming back to was the idea of the best party you've ever been to that you're not sure you're going to survive.
Right.
And it was sort of that feeling. Whether that party was in a nightclub or at a roller derby or whatever, it's the science fictional and fantastical aspects of that night that you will never forget that mm-hmm. somehow went horribly wrong, yet you survived and you are covered in tattered glitter somehow. That's sort of the feel that we were going for.
Well, and you did some interactivity because the launch party itself got people involved.
Yes.
You know, they started talking about the launch party before the Kickstarter was funded.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, there was a lot of excitement, and when the Kickstarter was going on, it kept rolling, and SF Signal helped mm-hmm. us quite a bit. We did some blogging there about it, and yeah, then we funded, and it was that wonderful...
And it was that moment of, we funded! Oh, crap, now we have to do it.
Yeah, and then we sat down with Jason and Janet, Harry, from Apex, and they laid down this timeline. We're like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's that tight.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. So we have, what, 3.5 weeks to edit the entire anthology. Awesome.
Yeah.
And nothing's been written.
Yeah, so yeah.
Great.
So all these writers, and we did do open submissions.
Yeah.
For a couple of slots. So we did also have to go through the 400 or so stories that came in.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And pick. We ended up only, because of just money, we only had, and actually we ran out of room for printing.
Yeah.
It wasn't even the money.
It was that we had space for X number of words, and we got there.
So yeah, Corey Scary and
Maurice
and Kyle.
And Kyle were the stories that came out of the open submissions period.
Yeah, Kyle S. Johnson wrote that story with Maurice.
Maurice, yeah.
Yeah, so, and their story is like a...
It's a Parliament Funkadelic tribute.
Yeah.
Maurice actually messaged me while I was at work, because I keep my Gmail open while I'm at work, and we were sort of midstream. Submissions were starting to come in, but we hadn't started making selections yet. And Maurice was like, so I have this idea, and I wanted to run it by you to see if it would be of interest. And he was like, I want to do something kind of George Clinton and P-Funk. And I was like, yes, please. Please do that. And he was like, all right. And then we got this awesome story that was just, it was amazing and epic and great and fun.
Yeah, so that was modestly time-consuming, too, to actually go through the subs. And we had
some submissions readers who were really great, and they got what we were trying to do.
Yeah, it was a combination of Apex readers
and Electric Philosophy
readers, so they already kind of knew the editorial mindset of the group, mm-hmm.
and
which helped.
But yeah, once the writers start turning in, we literally had like 2.5 weeks to edit mm-hmm. the book, work with the writers, get the final drafts in, and get it in a manuscript form to Jason,
so that he could do the publication part.
Because you need to get out the advanced reading copies
3 months ahead,
so that they can be reviewed.
Right.
So if you're going to launch in August. And I think we have a September 1 date or something like that. So you need to get stuff to people by May or June, mm-hmm. end of May, beginning of June. If you're finishing the Kickstarter in mid-February, to have a finished book by
mid-May.
You're not leaving yourself a lot of time. And knowing that nothing was written, with the exception of Shannon's novella,
it's pretty terrifying.
I don't know how we did it.
These writers, I mean, not only were they excited about the project, I mean, for the most part, these were writers that all of us had worked with or knew mm-hmm. personally, and knew that these were people who could do this.
Yeah.
So we were
they
very
They already
confident.
Were excited with ideas. They were fast writers to begin with.
Right.
And we had existing relationships where if we were in a position where it was like, look, it's now or never, they weren't going to be upset by that because they understood.
Yeah. And kind of the magic that happens with an anthology, like if you had to write a novel in that time frame, you might not be able to do it.
Right. Or you'd alienate all your family forever.
You're breaking up the 120,000 words into 20 people. So they're all moving at the same time mm-hmm. on a much smaller scale. Then we get everything.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a different editing is a different process.
So
yeah.
But
so I just had to tell you guys, John and I were chatting early on in the con, and he said something about he was already thinking about next year.
Right.
Right. And so Janet is a friend, and I saw her at the con, and I said, so what do you think about doing one of these every year? And her eyes got so big, and she's like, well, no one has said that to me.
As of this second,
never again.
We will never ever again do this. However, we are foolish people.
Yes.
I am very foolish.
Well, I mean, as much as it was a lot of work on a really short timeline, the whole process was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Having the level of creative control that we had was really wonderful because we were able to get exactly the kind of thing that we wanted. Since our Kickstarter funded the cover art, you know,
cover art from Galen.
Yeah, awesome. Galen was the only person we talked about as a cover artist. It was like, we have to have Galen. We think she can really capture
Galen
the feel.
Dara.
She hadn't had a lot of pieces out at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
But I just thought there's something about the way her art looks that I think kind of captures
what we were looking
for. Well, she had been really just, I mean, her work for Lightspeed over the last couple of years has just been getting better and better. Mm-hmm. And then she did.
And her best book ever is another for Glitter cover. And
she's also doing stuff for Dagon Books.
Yeah.
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 So she's been doing book covers there.
Yeah.
And she's got this, it's almost like sweeping thin lines and it's I'm not an art major, I can't describe it, but it's the style
for those who and hopefully I'm sure there will be links on this, you know, too.
It depends on if the check clears.
If the check clears, I mean, go see the cover, because the cover does capture the beauty of it. Last night at the launch party was the glow skating started at one moment and the disco balls dropped. And I looked out and Galen actually wore this just wonderful Vegas sparkle dress, and Lynn is out there in her sparkle dress, and everyone
is
sparkling.
Pictures?
Yes.
Well, you got to send us the pictures too. We'll put them in the post.
But
there are
There's
if you go to the Glitter and Mayhem Facebook page, I posted like a half dozen photos.
Is that Liz Argall?
That's Liz Gorinsky.
Oh, Liz Gorinsky. Okay.
Yes. A different.
The Liz.
They were both
different tall Liz.
Yeah. Both tall Liz's were there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she was ridiculously excited about the. Yeah. I saw her in the dealer's room, and she's just like, "Oh, I can't wait! I cannot wait!"
Yeah. Yeah, we all had a great time.
There's a half dozen or so pictures that have been posted up on the Glitter Mayhem Facebook page.
Okay.
And then Locust was there to roller skate. So I believe there's going to be some pictures of Locust, and then I had the camera for a while, so we'll have those photos as well.
But it was that beautiful moment of looking out there and going, that's our cover.
Yep.
This all really happened. We made this book. And I am so proud of this book, and because, once again, why we won't do this again, it could have gone really poorly. I mean, because we would have had to deliver something, and it could have been this all kind of, like, goofy thing where everyone just wrote bad vampire fic in the bronze at Buffy, you know, and from top to bottom of these stories, and said,
I never even considered that. Oh my god.
It's like, you people, but these John, it's okay, we made the book,
it didn't happen.
You're safe now.
I just have my blinders on, I'm like, it's gonna be great, it looks so shiny from here.
But
everyone's never once entered your mind as a possibility.
Never.
But that's, everyone brought that. Yeah. I mean, you know, like Amal Motar and so many others brought their A games, and all of them brought their A and brought stories which I just read. Well, this is phenomenal. I can't, because the creativity and just the knowing that they could be as debaucherous and raunchy and drug filled and just. It was.
There were no taboos for this anthology, essentially, and you know, we kept getting sort of queries going. Is it okay if there's sexy times in this? Is it okay? It's like the word debauchery is in the subtitle. It's okay. Just make it relevant to the story.
Yeah. Right. So you know, when we're seeing things like the SF Signal gave a great review, and Locust has a great review in Publishers Weekly, and when Locust said four of these stories are award worthy. It's like,
yeah,
when you edit an anthology, I mean, if people are talking about one story from that anthology as, wow, that should be considered for awards, you're like,
yay.
Yes, I've achieved greatness this year. I am so happy with this. The fact that that Karen and Locust is saying four is just...
We're beside ourselves.
As editors, because we've done this on this small time frame, so much could have gone wrong. Bronze.
And Spike.
This is gonna sound like I'm tooting my own horn, and I'm not exactly trying to do that, but the
toot away.
The last original anthology I did, the Logorrhea, which was all stories based on spelling bee winning words.
Right.
The anthology was up for World Fantasy. Two of the stories were up for World Fantasy, and one of them won.
Mm-hmm.
A couple stories were up for Hugo's. There was one that was up for, I think, a Stoker. A bunch of stories got reprinted. So I could be sort of a Pollyanna and say, well, that's just how they are. But I realize how unusual that is. And it's really, I think that's where you're finding the concept that lets the writers play with their creativity in the way that they want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, like, we're going to do pirates or we're going to do vampires. And I like pirate stories, I like vampire stories. I'm not putting anyone down, but you're setting up expectations that limit people with those types of things. And something like this has its own limits.
But the limit is more in terms of feel and thematics rather than specific story elements that need to be there.
These are not genre tropes that are seen that often.
Yeah.
You just don't, you know, when we, obviously, we work on magazines, you know, these are not the kinds of, you know, there are certain kinds of stories where you see them over and over again because these genre tropes are so burned into our brains of this is what science fiction is, this is what horror is, this is what fantasy is, and all of us have read it and we've published it and maybe even written it, but these are stories where, yeah, it's like we could not have, it would have been very hard to do this as a reprint anthology. I don't know if we could have found that many stories that would have fit what we were going for.
And just as a side note, my vampire pirate zombie boyfriend is coming out from Disney in 2016.
Oh, cool. So, yes. Looking forward to that.
Awesome.
I'm hoping you do the novelization, Patrick.
I hope it has either Selena Gomez or... and that's where I lose it.
No, I think Disney will bring Lindsay Lohan back.
Let's
add,
ooh, that'd be good.
Darn, I was hoping for Bridget Mendler.
We cannot talk... I can no longer joke about Selena Gomez because then bad things happen on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
Okay, sure. Not that bad, but it's like I made a joke about this movie that just came out with Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez in a car.
Oh, yes, Kidnapped or something?
Yeah. Whatever it frickin' is, because I cannot think of a worse 2 hours of my life than watching Selena Gomez and Ethan Hawke in a car. That is the worst road trip, and I make that joke, and then the frickin' movie starts following me on Twitter. It's like, oh, you don't want to follow me. You don't, I'm not really... No, I'm not
your target audience.
I am not helping your movie.
You know who else was actually very upset about that movie because he wasn't able to get a part in it was Vin Diesel. So,
yes.
Cars, driving fast.
I was going to say, isn't it required that he's in all car-based movies?
Yes.
If that's the way it has to go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's busy gaming right now.
Yeah.
He's got a tabletop game going with Judi Dench again.
Good.
All right, so we are running out of time.
No.
So we've got to kind of wrap it up a little bit here. Where is Glitter and Mayhem available?
Everywhere that fine books are sold. In any of your preferred online venues, as well as through Apex Publications if you want paper copies. Here at Con, they are exclusively at Larry Smith Booksellers' table in the dealer room.
Which this is going out 2 weeks
later.
Yes,
I know. It's
so if you have a time machine
if you have a time
and come
machine,
back to WorldCon...
Get into your TARDIS and go to Larry Smith and buy it.
I'm sure Larry Smith Books appreciates the plug.
I'm sure they do.
And if you are a library or another place, there are distribution channels through Apex that you can order this.
Yes. Yeah, it's available through Ingram as one of the major vendors, and so you can order it anywhere.
If you're one of the only Mac nerds that John knows, and he's having trouble... getting other Mac people the books that they got for them Kickstarter, you can actually get access to it that way too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that may just be me.
Probably. But it is available at all fine ebook sellers, and there are paper copies through the Amazons and all the other places. So
very cool. So next year, the slumber party thing, you thinking that's going
to
go?
Well, we will be in London. We have yet to think of a London theme yet.
So I think a slumber party in Spokane, that'll give us a little bit more time. We'll do scary bedtime stories.
There you go.
We'll check everyone into... Since we'll be in near enough to rural Washington, perhaps we will find an abandoned summer camp.
There you go.
And we will all get cabins there.
As long as there's no Sasquatch involved.
See, I'm already thinking now if we do an SF slasher summer camp anthology. Somewhere Shannon right now is popping her head up and going, are they talking about me? She's producing this story for me as we speak, merely because she knows.
I really want to write a cabin in the woods type story, but with science fiction elements and maybe a little bit of Twin Peaks weirdness in it.
Actually, that story would not be from Shannon. It would become from Mira Grant. So
yes,
that's true.
Maybe you can get both of them to write something.
They could co-write something.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Actually, that would be fun if they co. Well, we'll talk later.
That could be an idea for an anthology. People writing co-writing stories with their pseudonyms.
I think you should pitch that.
Yeah. go with God.
All right. Thanks everyone. This has been a lot of fun. You're up for a Hugo.
I'm up for three Hugos.
You're up for three Hugos.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So good luck on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Not too much good luck to her.
I wish luck to everybody.
You're not going to say good luck in the two categories we're not competing against?
No, good luck in all three.
All right. That is
clearly he's a better person than you.
He's a better person than I am. No, actually, there's been a lot of that this weekend. It's like, for instance, you know, my nomination's in semi-prosing for Apex Magazine. We've spent the entire weekend. There are pictures of Twitter on right now of right after dinner. We had dinner last night with Christy Yant and John Joseph Adams, and Christy made sure there was a picture of us as bitter rivals.
Yes.
The night before the Hugos.
I'm not like that at all. There are podcasts on the Hugo ballot.
Yes.
It's all that matters.
No, and that's something, you know, because, yes, F Squeakcast is on for Lynn and all of her.
But I do believe there is a motion to change it so that the only podcasts that are actually eligible are done on cassette tape.
Did you know Christopher Garcia did that?
I do, yes.
Yes.
And he knows, and I'm joking about it.
I need to get his podcast on his cassette tapes.
Yes. And I actually asked
him. Do we even have a player?
I was asking him, where does he get his cassette tapes, because I don't even see those in stores anymore. He's like, oh, there's this great place that you can get them in bulk. Yeah. I just buy like huge amounts of them, and that's what I use.
You people frighten me.
Anyway, so yes. Any final thoughts you want to throw out there?
Buy the book. It's awesome.
I just want to, and this is one of the, I want to thank everybody who helped us with this thing with the Kickstarter more than other routes to publication in that. And even though there are acknowledgments, I mean, we have to thank all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who sent us money and backed the book and
boosted the signal and pushed the party.
Yeah, awesome. Because there's probably 1,000 people we need to thank who made this book possible.
Yep.
John, you want to toot your own horn?
I'll finish by saying, short fiction is dead. Long live short fiction.
All right. Well, thanks everybody. This is great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Wah, wah. And scene.